guys. Yeah. You guys want to, like, get out of here, get some ice cream, now that everything's opening up again?
I would love to.
I do like ice cream.
Let's go get some ice cream.
Michael, can you give me a little bit more room?
I'm in the front. What are you talking about?
Yeah, give me more room. Move your chair up.
Fine.
Come on.
Oh, you guys crushed my dice. But yeah, we're here. Ding, ding.
Oh, hold on. Here, let me get the door for you.
Oh, thanks, man. Real homie.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Yeah, let's see what kind of flavors they got. Oh, God. Why do they have so many? What are you guys looking at?
I like this Berry Blast Bard. It looks pretty nice.
Yeah, what about you, Jake?
I like Rainbow Sherbert. I already know it, so I'll get that one.
Jake, you want to get Rainbow Sherbert? They have Rocky Rogue.
Oh, yeah, Rocky Rogue.
What's this
one? I love Rocky
one?
Rogue. Oh, it's got sneak attack.
Roadkill Ranger? Ugh. I'm not going to lie, guys. None of these flavors are really doing it for me.
Wait, Ben, I've got the perfect one here for you.
Oh?
Vanilla.
Brilliant. Man, you know what, though? I just wish there were more flavors to these flavors, you know, to these ice creams.
Well, I mean, there's, like, the toppings.
Yeah, but, like, let's look at some of these toppings, okay?
I always get gummy bears, so.
Like, what are these toppings, like? A little bit of love, a little bit of eloquence. Like, what even is that? I don't get it. Like, what is this? Evocation? Be gone. I don't want it. You know what sounds amazing? The kind of stuff they got in the back. I'm talking Path of the Beast, all right? I'm talking Astral Self.
What about Redemption? That one sounds cool.
No.
Oh, my bad. Never mind.
Not cool enough.
Ooh, Sun Soul. Sun Soul, that's like bright and flashy.
Still not cool enough.
Oh. Okay.
But you know what is cool enough? Circle of Stars.
In case you couldn't tell, today we're talking about subclasses.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to Traveler's Tips and Tales. My name is Ben.
I'm Jake.
I'm dabbing, but you can't see it.
Oh, God, no.
And I'm Mike.
What about Drunken Master?
Jake's still talking about these flavors and toppings.
Today we're talking about subclasses, specifically those that came out of Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. Adding a little bit of flavor to your classes, all right? Starting with Barbarian. Now, guys, I don't know about you. But for a long time, I've been kind of wanting Barbarian to get more into the more roleplay-esque, you know, Barbarians. Kind of like Totem Warrior, where they're a little bit of borrowing from Druid, because I love Druid and I love Barbarian, and I would love if they would kind of collab a little more, right? And that's kind of what we got. We kind of got two different subclasses that both do the same thing. In that regard, with Tasha's, we got Path of the Beast and we got Path of Wild Magic. Both of which heavily associated with the Fae and nature and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's just talk about Path of the Beast, okay?
Okay.
You, when you rage, you transform parts of your body into, like, animalistic pieces, like claws, or you get a tail or teeth that you bite and rip and tear. And it's amazing. And on the suggested origins of where you got this ability, there's four of them. One of your parents is a lycanthrope, and you inherited part of their curse, but not all of it. You're descended from an archdruid. Druids. And have the ability to partially change shape. A fae spirit gifted you with this ability. Or an ancient animal spirit dwells within you. This is kind of like... It's lycanthropy, it's druidic, it's fae, and it's totem warrior... esque all in one, and I really like this subclass.
Okay.
It is really fun.
It's pretty fantastic.
It's pretty fantastic. I don't know if you ever looked at it, Jake, but I'm about to tell you all about it. So level 3, when you take this, you get Form of the Beast. Okay. When you rage, you can transform. revealing a little bit of bestial power. Okay, until your rage ends, you manifest a natural weapon. It counts as a simple melee weapon for you, and you add your strength modifier to the attack and damage rolls when you attack with it as normal. But you choose a different form every time you rage. So depending on what the circumstances are, you get a little bit more versatility. You can choose Bite, which transforms your mouth into sharp teeth and muzzle. It deals 1d8 piercing damage, and when you damage a creature with it once per turn, if you have less than half of your original hit points, you get to gain hit points equal to your proficiency bonus.
Oh.
So you get to just rip a chunk out of somebody and eat it, and you heal magically. Isn't that lovely?
Okay.
It's a little bit of a savage thing here. You might like this one, Mr. Paunch. Claws.
Oh.
Each of your hands transforms into a claw, which you can use as a weapon if it's empty. It deals 1d6 slashing damage on a hit, and once on each of your turns when you attack with a claw using the attack action, you can make one additional claw attack as part of the same action.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty sweet.
Kind of like a little. Three attacks instead of two.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you get it at level three, so you want two attacks instead of one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then the other option you get is tail. You grow a lashing, spiny tail, which deals 1d8 piercing damage on a hit and has the reach property.
Oh!
Yeah. If a creature you can see within 10 feet of you hits you with an attack roll, you can use your reaction to swipe your tail and roll a d8, applying a bonus to your armor class equal to the number rolled, potentially causing the attack to miss you. It's so good. And you get to choose one every time you rage. I kind of like
the tail the most.
Yeah, I like the claws the most just because
The idea... You can change it every time you rage?
Yes.
Oh, so it's not just like a one-time thing where... Yeah. You choose at the start, and then that's what you got.
Exactly. That's neat. That's almost neat. Like overpowered a little bit.
A little bit.
I like the bite and the claws, personally, because I like the idea of healing as a barbarian, even though it's completely unnecessary, but it's lovely.
Even though it's this little tiny bit, but still.
It's still, like, you're taking reduced damage from most things. Mm-hmm. But then at sixth level, that's not all. You get more. You get even more power.
Okay.
When using your natural weapons from your form of the beast, as you're raging, they count as magical for the purpose of overcoming resistance and immunity. And you can alter your form to help you adapt to your surroundings. When you finish a short or long rest, you can choose one of the following benefits, which lasts until you finish your next short or long rest. You can gain a swimming speed equal to your walking speed and breathe underwater.
Okay.
You gain a climbing speed equal to your walking speed, and you can climb on difficult surfaces, including upside down on ceilings without needing to make an ability check.
Okay.
Or, and this one's my favorite, when you jump, you can make a strength athletics check and extend your jump by a number of feet equal to the check's total, and you can make that check once per turn.
Okay.
I love that.
Yeah, just imagine you roll a 20 plus your modifier.
Yeah, you just leap. You're just like, boing, boing, boing. Imagine trying to get away from someone like that. Like, you're running, like, and you're like, oh man, I've got this. I'm super fast. And all of a sudden, this guy just hulks out. His veins pop out of his forehead. And he just, in one jump, covers the entire distance you just sprinted in that one turn.
My favorite part about this is that it's not limited by your rage. You can do this all day long.
Yes.
And you can swap it out with just a short rest, depending on what's going on around you, you know?
Yeah, it's so useful, especially if your DM is like, we're going to run an underwater campaign, and you're just like, I don't want to be an underwater race. And your DM's like, well, how are you going to pull that off? And you should be like, barbarian. Like... I'll just never choose anything else. All right. But at level 10, you get Infectious Fury. When you hit a creature with your natural weapons while you're raging, The beast within you can curse your target with rabid fury. The target has to succeed on a wisdom save equal to 8 plus your con mod plus proficiency bonus, or suffer one of the following effects, and it is your choice which effect. The target must either use its reaction to make a melee attack against another creature of your choice that you can see, or it takes 2d12 psychic damage. And you can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. Yeah. I dig that. A barbarian dealing psychic damage? Mm-hmm. That's insane to me. You're the anti-barbarian barbarian.
Yeah.
But then at level 14, you get an ability called Call the Hunt. The beast within you grows so powerful that you can spread its ferocity to others and gain resilience from them joining your hunt. When you enter your rage, you can choose a number of other willing creatures you can see within 30 feet of you, equal to your constitution modifier, minimum of 1. You gain 5 temporary hit points for each creature that accepts this feature. Until the rage ends, the chosen creatures can each use the following benefit once on each of their turns. When the creature hits a target with an attack roll and deals damage to it, the creature can roll a d6 and and gain a bonus to the damage equal to the number rolled. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regained all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
All right.
You just add more damage to all of your allies.
And also get temp hit points.
Yeah. And by the time... First of all, the concept of giving a barbarian temp hit points based on con mod is already kind of insane, because your con mod's already going to become insane, especially at level 20. It'll hit 24, so that's plus 7. Yeah, yeah. 7 other people can get that, so 7 times 5.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's a potential of like 76 extra damage across the battlefield.
Bigger than most parties, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's insane to me. Oh, I love it so much. But the other barbarian subclass, which is also a really, really good one, is Path of Wild Magic. All right.
Mm.
And it's not directly associated with the sorcerer wild magic, but it is kind of similar. Basically, you gain the ability to influence pure concentrated magic, either as a gift from the Fae or just because you figured it out, or you have some kind of connection to natural magic. At third level, you gain an ability called Magic Awareness. And this is kind of a busted ability in my personal opinion, which is why it's so good. As an action, you can open your awareness to the presence of concentrated magic till the end of your next turn. You know the location of any spell or magic item within 60 feet of you that isn't behind total cover.
Oh, behind total cover.
Yeah. When you sense the spell, you learn which school of magic it belongs to. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. You get free detect magic.
Yeah, advanced detect magic is advanced. 60 feet, not 30. Not that scumbag 30 feet.
You walk into a room, you're just like, hold on, there's magic in here. Where's that? There, 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 and there. And that one will explode. Like, what? Like, what? Oh, God, it's so busted, in my opinion. It's just like, oh, yeah, I'll find all your magic items, DM. You can hide nothing from me.
All it's got to do is put it in a box or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. But is the box magical? Probably. Are they not protecting their magic item with a magical lock? Because in that case, you'd know about the magical lock.
It's just a lead box.
With a normal lock. Lead box?
It's a really good lock.
All you need is an inquisitive rogue, and then the DM will literally not be able to keep anything from you. The barbarian's like, magic, and the inquisitive rogue's like, box.
Box.
But box. Also at third level, you get Wild Surge.
The magical energy. This is what we all signed up for.
Yeah, the magical energy rolling inside you sometimes erupts from you. When you enter your rage, roll on the wild magic table to determine the magical effect produced. If the effect requires a saving throw, it's equal to, you know, 8 plus proficiency plus con mod. And it has its own list of 8 effects. I'm not going to read them all out right now, but they're all pretty good. One of them, you get free Misty Step every turn. I mean, it's
okay.
Amazing. One of them increases your armor class. One, like, restricts people. One shoots bolts of lightning from you. It's pretty great. But then at 6th level, you get Bolstering Magic. You can harness your wild magic to bolster yourself or a companion. As an action, you can touch one creature, which can be yourself. It specifically states that. And confer one of the following benefits of your choice to that creature. For 10 minutes, the creature can roll a d3 whenever making an attack roll or an ability check and add the number rolled to the d20. Or, roll a d3, the creature regains one expended spell slot, the level of which equals the number rolled or lower, the creature's choice. Once a creature receives this benefit, that creature can't receive it again until after a long rest. That's only for the second one.
Oh. Wait, no. That's just for... So for the 10 minutes, there's no limit per turn?
No.
You can just do it on every single thing that you do?
Yep. It's either for 10 minutes, you get a D3 added to... Which, by the way, I love that they are adding D3s, finally. I have so many D3s I can't use because no one uses D3s. It's 5th edition, but yeah, for 10 minutes you get a D3 added to every ability check or attack, or you regain a spell slot of 3rd level or lower, potentially. And you can use this a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus.
I don't know if that's really, like, I don't know how balanced that is. Like, trying to think about, like, whether I want to give it to a spellcaster or a frontline. Like, I feel like 10 whole minutes of a frontline's, like, ability checks and attacks... Yep. Adding a D3 versus, like, one spell slot.
Like... But that's the thing. It has potential to be used outside of combat.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you need to use invisibility, or you need to use a specific spell like Detect Magic or Identify.
Yeah.
And you desperately need it. The Barbarian, of all places, can give you that.
I mean, the nice thing is that this isn't, like, a once-per-day thing. It's a...
No.
Proficiency bonus times per day, so.
Yeah, up to 7 times per day, potentially.
6.
Yeah. Silence. But yeah, at 10th level, you get an ability called Unstable Backlash. When you are in peril during your rage, the magic within you can lash out. Immediately after you take damage or fail a saving throw, while raging, you can use your reaction to roll on the wild magic table and immediately produce the effect rolled. This effect replaces your current wild magic effect. So, if you don't like what you rolled the first time, you can just redo it every time you take damage or fail a saving throw.
Solid.
Yeah. Yeah. You just keep rolling your chances until you get that fancy one you want.
And then at level 14, you get Controlled Surge. Whenever you roll on the wild magic table, you can roll the die twice and choose which of the two effects to unleash. If you roll the same number on both dice, you can ignore the number and choose any effect on the table.
Oh.
And it's only a d8. So your chances are actually pretty decent of rolling the same number. It's not even that rare.
You know what I think would be funnier?
Hmm.
If you roll the same number, you could choose any effect on the table except for that number.
That would be funny. But yeah, these are the two nature fey weirdness that they added to Barbarian, and I love them both with a
You have
passion.
Been warned. If you ever play in my game that I run and you play a wild magic Barbarian, I'm going to toggle that feature, and I'm going to make it if you roll the same number. You can't choose that number. You can choose any of the other 7. You've been warned now. Just because I think it's funny. And I don't feel bad about nerfing it like that. Because I don't really think it nerfs it that much.
Yeah, not really.
I ain't even met.
Not gonna lie, I also kind of think it's funny, so I'm cool with it.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what they added to Barbarian in Taja's, and I'm really excited about it. I've already made a Path of the Beast. He's a Leonin, actually, who was born with tiger stripes, so he was born more savage than his brethren. His brethren cast him out of their clan, so he went to the city and was like, I bet I'll fit in the ghettos. And then everyone was like, you're a savage, we don't like you. And he was like, I'm just going to eat people now. And then everyone respects him now because he eats people.
Oh,
nice.
Okay.
Which is why I like the bite feature so much. Because in the middle of combat, he's just like, I'm hungry. And the other guy's like, wait, what? No.
I see.
He's a bad guy. He's supposed to be evil.
Oh, okay, we're good now. That's fine.
Yeah, so I think I really like what they added for Bard, because
you would.
Yeah, you know, as somebody who is a big fan of Bard, I'm expected to like this, because there's one thing that Tosh's has done, it is create a lot of really cool things.
Listen, boys. I think this first episode we looked at the first three classes in the game, and we all knew exactly who was taking what.
Yeah. Pretty much. And here's the thing. So Tasha's does this tricky little thing where they add two colleges for bards. But really, they're only adding one. Because they have College of Creation, which is brand new to the game. Which, Tasha's, thank you. I really like this subclass. But then they also put College of Eloquence, and they're trying to front like it's the first time this is ever being printed, but nope, it was printed in Theros.
To be fair, though,
Theros is not a source book. It's a campaign. It's not a supplement book.
Yeah, and also to be fair, like
it's not a campaign book. It's more of a setting book.
It's like a setting book, but it has like.
The thing is that Tasha's kind of does that a lot, and it's okay. I'm cool with it. Like, they literally gave us Artificer again, so...
I'm cool with it, but mainly just because I really like College of Creation, and I'm willing to look past this little mishap here.
The hiccup.
Because, let me just tell you guys about the College of Creation, and its greatness.
Okay.
You can try.
Okay.
At third level, when you pick your Bard College... you get a couple of things. The first thing you get is a Mote of Potential. Whenever you give a creature a Bardic Inspiration die, you can utter a note from the Song of Creation to create a tiny Mote of Potential, which orbits within 5 feet of that creature. The Mote is intangible and invulnerable, and it lasts until the Bardic Inspiration die is lost. The Mote looks like a musical note, a star, a flower, or any other symbol of art or life that you choose. When the creature uses the Bardic Inspiration die, the Mote provides an additional effect based on whether the die benefits an ability check, an attack roll, or a saving throw. I really like this because doing different things with your Inspiration die actually provides different things now. I like this a lot. You got ability checks. When the creature rolls the Bardic Inspiration die to add it to an ability check, the creature can roll the Bardic Inspiration die again and choose which roll to use as the Mote pops and emits colorful, harmless sparks for a moment. So you can be like, alright, I'm a roll because I don't think my ability check is going to pass with that. Oh look, I only rolled a 2. Let me re-roll. Oh look, a 5. I like that.
Wow, yep. Gotta make bards even more adaptable.
Yes. when you do it for an attack roll. So immediately after the creature rolls the Bardic Inspiration die to add it to an attack roll against a target, the Mote thunderously shatters. The target and each creature of your choice that you can see within 5 feet of it must succeed on a constitution saving throw against your spell save DC or take thunder damage equal to the number rolled on the Bardic Inspiration die. You just get to deal extra damage. For free.
Okay, I will admit, bards don't do too much damage, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
But you're allowing somebody else to do the damage. So it's great. You still don't get to do a whole lot of damage yourself.
I'm not gonna lie, sometimes when you're playing support, the most, like, amazing thing you can feel is when you do something that directly results in everyone else succeeding just barely. Like guidance.
Yeah, like, I love
guidance. Like, when you use guidance and, like, when your party's like, oh, I passed by, like, 5, you're like, oh, whatever. But when they're like, oh, no, I don't know if I'm going to do it, and they roll and, like, barely pass, you're just like, yeah, that was all me
it's
right
like
there.
That moment. It's like that moment when you say you cast guidance before they do an ability check, and then they roll and they tell the DM their number, and the DM goes, you fail. And then you go, did you use guidance? And they go, oh, you're right. And then they roll the D4, and then the DM's like, you pass. And you're like, hey! Yep.
That is the best feeling ever right there.
And here's another great thing. So we talked about ability checks and attack rolls, but what about saving throws? Immediately after the creature rolls the Bardic Inspiration die and adds it to his saving throw, the moat vanishes with the sound of soft music, causing the creature to gain temporary hit points equal to the number rolled on the Bardic Inspiration die, plus your charisma modifier, minimum of 1. That's just fun. I like just being able to give out some bonus hit points.
Yeah.
I agree. For that at level 3, like, that can be huge.
Yeah. You can do this early on.
Yeah.
Very useful.
At third level, you also get the ability Performance of Creation. As an action, you can channel the magic of the Song of Creation to create one non-magical item of your choice in an unoccupied space within 10 feet of you. The item must appear on a surface or in a liquid that can support it. The gold point value of the item can't be more than 20 times your bard level, and the item must be medium or smaller. The item glimmers softly, and a creature can faintly hear music when touching it. The created item disappears after a number of hours equal to your proficiency bonus. For examples of items you can create, see the equipment chapter of the player's handbook. Once you create an item with this feature, you cannot do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of second level or higher to use the feature again. You can have only one item created by this feature at a time. If you use this action and already have an item from this feature, the first one immediately vanishes, and the size of the item you can create with this feature increases by 1 size category when you reach 6th level and 14th level to large and huge, respectively. Dude, you could be Momo Yayorozu from My Hero.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like this ability is not that great at the start, but then as you get into the later levels, it could be very helpful because you could just make a cart.
Dude, okay, here's what I'm envisioning, right? You're 6th level, all right? You're on a ship sailing across the sea. All of a sudden, you're being tailed by another ship. You use this feature, create a cannon. You expend a 2nd level spell slot to create a cannonball.
But then the cannon vanishes.
No.
Yeah, you can't have 2 at once.
Oh, yeah.
So here's what you do, man. So
you
make
the cannon, and then you just grab a cannonball. You're on a pirate ship.
Here's what you do. You just create specifically a loaded cannon.
You just grab a cannonball? This isn't a rare thing. Why is this such a problem for you guys?
If you just create a loaded cannon, you don't have to use the first cannonball, though.
Yeah, or just specify, I create Gatling gun. Like, screw the cannonball, man.
I create a 50 BMG. And I can do that at 3rd level because it is medium.
I create a medium-sized thermonuclear device.
You're just at 6th level. You're like, I create an atomic bomb.
Yep.
Thing is, if someone touches that bomb, they hear soft music playing.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what's funny to me, though? Like, on the topic of My Hero, because you did mention Momo.
Yes.
She canonically can make explosives.
Yes.
And she could make a gun if she wanted to. And then, like, the newest parts of the manga, she definitely has reason to. Right? Like, but she doesn't. And I'm like, why? Just... minigun clip attached to your wherever you're having this come out of your body, just eat a bunch of cake beforehand, and you'll be thin by the end. Trust me. Just mow them down, please. Like, I don't think anyone will actually judge you for it.
Just belt fed.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, dude, that's it. The manga's over. Story's over. We won. We're good. But no. She won't do it, and it pisses me off. She could even use depleted uranium rounds, and no one could stop her, because she could just make them. That's my rant for the day. Thank you very much. I'm leaving.
All right, so at sixth level, you get animating performance. As an action, you can target a large or smaller non-magical item you can see within 30 feet of you and animate it. The animated item uses the dancing item stat block, which uses your proficiency bonus. The item is friendly to you and your companions and obeys your commands, lives for 1 hour until it is reduced to 0 hit points or until you die. In combat, the item shares your initiative count, but it takes its turn immediately after yours. It can move and use its reaction on its own, but the only action it takes on its turn is the dodge action, unless you take a bonus action to command it to take another. That action can be one in its stat block or another action. If you are incapacitated, the item can take any action of its choice instead of just dodge. When you use your Bardic Inspiration feature, you can command the item as part of the same bonus action you use for the Bardic Inspiration. Once you animate an item with this feature, you cannot do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of 3rd level or higher to use the feature again. You can only have one item animated by this feature at a time, and if you use this action and already have a dancing item from this feature, the first one immediately becomes inanimate.
All right, Michael, I'm waiting for your pitch where you animate two things at once. Let's hear it.
No, my pitch is you use performance of creation to create an item and then you use animating performance on said item.
You're creating yourself a best friend. This is actually the College of Loneliness is what this is.
This sounds like a fake man's artificer to me.
let me tell you. So the dancing item... Oh my god,
wait. Guys. Multi-class this with Artificer. It would be so broken.
Here's the thing.
All you need is 6 levels of this one.
So dancing item, the stat block that it gives here, armor class 16, hit points 10 plus 5 times your bard level. So already this automatically has 40 hit points. Speed 30 feet plus 30 feet fly speed. It's immune to poison and psychic damage, as well as the charmed, exhausted, poisoned, and frightened conditions. It has 60 feet dark vision, can understand any language you speak. But here's the thing that I really like. When any creature starts its turn within 10 feet of the item can increase or decrease the walking speed of that creature by 10 feet until the end of turn, provided the item is not incapacitated. You can just use your dancing item to just use slow.
Also, you can animate a cannon.
Yes.
That's it.
I can create a loaded cannon and then animate it. So that way it goes up to you and shoots off the ball inside.
It's at such a low level, too. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
This really has a lot of multi-class potential here.
Yeah. At 14th level, you get Creative Crescendo. When you use your Performance of Creation feature, which is the creating an item, you can create more than one item at once. The number of items equals your Charisma modifier, minimum of 2. If you create an item that would exceed that number, you choose which of the previously created items disappears. Only one of these items can be of the maximum size you can create. The rest must be small or tiny. You are no longer limited by gold point value in creating items with performance of creation.
Okay, now you could make a cannon with a cannonball in it for 2 different items.
I was gonna say, just make a blunderbuss and like a pile of rounds, like, or just load ball bearings, not gonna lie.
Okay, so you have a ring of enlarge reduce, right?
Okay.
I don't know why you have it, but you do. You use performance of creation to create a rifle. You affix the ring of enlarge reduce to the end of the rifle. And you just load a bunch of ball bearings.
Michael, we've all seen the meme.
I know. But once again, we have a way of utilizing this class. And I like
it. I'm not going to lie. I feel like the 14th level ability is kind of eh for me. But, I mean, I could only see me seeing this for 6 levels anyway, so
I'm okay. Well, and I mean, it's basically just you get to do more with one of your previous features.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
And it you know, at 14th level, you're able to create a huge item, so.
Look, guys, am I the only one that is, like, ignoring purposely the fact that you can create a key that can walk its way to a door, unlock it for you, and then pick up and take with it something that is inside the room?
Listen, I'm just saying, name a huge creature.
Beholder? Are beholder? No, they're large.
They're large. Huge? Giants.
They're giant.
You now have a giant-sized cannonball.
So clerics also get 2 subclasses here. They actually get 3 in the book, but one of them's just a reprint from Ravnica, so we'll just brush that under the rug. That's fine. Order domain, you can find it in Ravnica or in Tasha's, but yeah. You could look at it more, but I'm not going to cover it because it's not new material. So, the peace domain. All right. We'll start off.
The piece de la resistance.
How every single cleric subclass starts off. And that's with the extra spells that you get. The extra spells that you get for the peace domain specifically are at first level you get heroism and sanctuary. Third level spells, or at third level, you get second level spells with aid and warding bond. Your third level spells that you get at fifth level are beacon of hope and sending. 7th level, you get 4th level spells, which are Aura of Purity and Oteluk's Resonant Spear, or Sphere. I don't know why I keep saying that.
Dude, having a resonant spear? Oh, yeah. Dude,
oh, my gosh. And then at 9th level, you get 5th level spells, which is Greater Restoration. Nice pick. And Rary's Telepathic Bond. I don't know if you guys have looked at those two. Seemingly, I swear I've never heard of those spells before. I've read like the whole PHP and I just never noticed these two spells apparently. But these two are pretty neat spells. This resonant, you know, spear as it is, and also the telepathic bond. Pretty neat. You guys should go look into those. So at first level you also get the domain features for being a peace domain. You get proficiency in insight, performance, or persuasion skill. You get to choose whichever one. So an extra proficiency, which is always cool. And also, you also get another feature called emboldening bond. You can forge an empowering bond among people who are at peace with one another. As an action, you choose a number of willing creatures within 30 feet of you. This can include yourself, equal to your proficiency bonus. You create a magical bond among them for 10 minutes or until you use this feature again. While any bonded creature is within 30 feet of another, the creature can roll a d4 and add the number rolled to an attack, an ability check, or saving throw it makes. Each creature can add the d4 no more than once per turn. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
Pretty sick.
That's pretty neat. Yeah. Second level, you get the Channel Divinity. Your Channel Divinity that you get is called Balm of Peace. You can use your Channel Divinity to make your very presence a soothing balm. As an action, you can move up to your speed without provoking opportunity attacks, and when you move within 5 feet of another creature, of any other creature during this action, you can restore a number of hit points to that creature equal to 2d6 plus your wisdom modifier, minimum of 1 hit point. And a creature can receive this healing only once whenever you take this action. Which is pretty neat, because you're also moving with your action, which means, you know, you can go a little farther, you know, rather than just your normal movement. And you get to do some healing, you know, so if, like, you're on the run and you need to do some drive-by healing, can be nice, you know?
I mean, more healing is always nice.
Yeah, obviously. At 6th level, you get a feature called Protective Bond. And this feature is the bond you forge between people helps them protect each other. When a creature affected by your Emboldening Bond feature is about to take damage, a second bonded creature within 30 feet of the first can use its reaction to teleport to an unoccupied space within 5 feet of the first creature, and the second creature takes all the damage instead. Pretty neat! You can move other people when it's not enemy's turn. You can make you, the cleric, can allow that guy who's on your party use a reaction that teleports him to another person on your party who isn't you or the other guy, and he could take all of the third guy's damage, and he gets to move off of his turn with his reaction from an ability that you did.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Was that confusing?
only incredibly, but...
Good. I loved it. But yeah. At 8th level, you get potent spellcasting. You can add your wisdom modifier to the damage you deal with in a cleric cantrip. Pretty neat. Or, of course, you know, you can do plus strikes, but whatever. And also, at 17th level, you can get expansive bond. The benefits of your emboldening bond and protective bond features now work with the when the creatures are within 60 feet of each other. Moreover, when a creature uses protective bond to take someone else's damage, the creature has resistance to that damage, which is pretty neat. So yeah, that's Peace Domain. What do you guys think? It's a lot of like, you know, kind of odd, like, utility, like, very AoE utility, kind of.
Nothing wrong with that, though.
Nothing at all.
Like, if utility wasn't a thing we needed, Wizard wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't see anything wrong with just putting a little bit more.
And, I mean, obviously, you know, you can still be preparing, you know, those classic Cure Wounds and Prayer of Healings and Lesser Restorations and whatnot, so... You're still doing your normal cleric-y things, most likely. So, yeah. Moving on over to the next domain that I'm here to talk about from Tasha's Cauldron of Everything is the Twilight Domain. At first level, you get them fancy-pantsy spells that I would like to cover right now, including Fairy Fire and Sleep for first level spells, second level spells of Moonbeam and Sea Invisibility. We've got third level spells with Aura of Vitality and Liamen's Tiny Hut. Fourth level spells with Aura of Life and Greater Invisibility. That's a really good one. And also, fifth level spells of Circle of Power and Mislead. Pretty neat. Also, at first level, you gain proficiency with martial weapons and heavy armor. There you go. And also, at first level, you get a feature called Eyes of the Night. You can see through the deepest gloom. You have dark vision out to a range of 300 feet. In that radius, you can see in dim light as if it were bright light, and in darkness as if it were dim light. And, as an action, you can magically share the dark vision of this feature with willing creatures you can see within 10 feet of you, up to a number of creatures equal to your wisdom modifier, minimum of one creature. The shared dark vision lasts for 1 hour. Once you share it, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of any level to share it again. Holy cow, that's far! That's super good.
That may as well just be not dark at that point.
Yeah. I almost kind of want to just, like, have any character that normally doesn't have dark vision, and it's, like, a big hassle, and, I'm used to playing Halfling, you know? It's always a hassle that I don't have any dark vision. Just sink one level. Literally one level. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
And into Twilight Cleric, and then, boom, you can see everything. I love it. It's just great. And also, you know, you get martial weapons and heavy armor if you needed that, apparently. But, you know, including, you also get this next ability that I'm about to talk to you about. It's called Vigilant Blessing. At first level, the knight has taught you to be vigilant. As an action, you give one creature you touch, including possibly yourself, advantage on the next initiative roll the creature makes. This benefit ends immediately after the roll if you don't use this feature, or if you use this feature again. This is great. I would personally probably not use it on myself, just because I like clerics going later in the initiative, typically.
Yeah, I think it all depends on, you know, what kind of style you want to play it, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's very useful.
Oh yeah. But you get to give someone advantage.
Yeah.
Which is pretty neat. Get that rogue up there, you know?
Let's give it to either like the rogue or the barbarian or the fighter or even the paladin.
Yeah, something. I don't know.
Somebody who's gonna be like up front and close and personal.
Maybe the wizard so they can get that AoE spell off before, you know, everyone's up there. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Anyways, starting at second level, you get an additional channel divinity option. This one's called Twilight Sanctuary. You can use your channel divinity to refresh your allies with soothing twilight. As an action, you present your holy symbol, and a sphere of twilight emanates from you. The sphere is centered on you, has a 30-foot radius, and is filled with dim light. The sphere moves with you, and it lasts for 1 minute, or until you are incapacitated or die. Whenever a creature, including you, ends its turn in the sphere, which I hope you do, because it's, you know, kind of centered on a thing that you're holding. Anyways, you can grant that creature one of these benefits. You grant it temporary hit points equal to 1d6 plus your cleric level, or you end one effect on it, causing it to be charmed or frightened. Pretty neat. Level 6, you get Steps of the Night. You can draw on the magical power of night to rise into the air. As a bonus action, when you are in dim light or darkness, you can magically give yourself a flying speed equal to your walking speed for 1 minute. You can use this bonus action a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. You can fly for a minute, but you can fly.
I mean, a minute is sometimes all you need.
Start of combat. Most combat doesn't last a whole minute, so there you go. At 8th level, you get Divine Strike. You gain the ability to infuse your weapon strikes with Divine Energy once on each of your turns. When you hit a creature with a weapon attack, you can cause that attack to deal an extra 1d8 radiant damage. When you reach 14th level, extra damage increases to 2d8. Yada, yada, yada. We've heard it before. Who cares? You can also take Blessed Strikes if you want, but if you ask me, you're insane if you do that. Anyways. Because you get Divine Strike, which is...
Yeah.
I've done the spiel before. 17th level, you get Twilight Shroud. The twilight that you summon offers a protective embrace. You and your allies have half cover while in the sphere created by your Twilight Sanctuary. Not too crazy, I'm not gonna lie. Probably not, like, super useful all the time, but, like, I don't really care, because, like, I feel like the first half of the subclass is pretty neat, so I'm not that mad.
Yeah.
Also, you're a cleric, so you can still do, like, divine intervention and stuff, so, like, who cares? You're still kind of OP sometimes, so, you know, hey, what's up? But yeah, that is a Twilight Domain. Pretty neat. Pretty neat.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? It's kind of all right. If you wanted a little bit more edge into your cleric, I think this is great. Also, kind of like the College of Creation, I think this is great for multi-classing. I could see this working well with like rogue or something like that. Or even like some type of frontline.
100% work well with rogue. Or even like a dark paladin.
Yeah. I could see a whole lot of stuff. A lot of potential with this domain. But I don't really see a level 20 Twilight Domain. Like just a Twilight Domain cleric. Not gonna lie. But I mean, if you want to do it, be my guest, man. You do you. You know?
Just know Jacob thinks you were absolutely crazy.
No, we didn't go that far. I'm just saying,
Well, I gotta say, my guys, I think we did a pretty good job adding some extra flavor to these delicious, delicious classes.
You mean ice cream?
We're back on the ice cream thing.
Yeah, those. I mean, we've been standing here this whole time. I'm pretty sure they're closed now. They've just been staring at us for a while.
So
undisclosed ice cream parlor. You're
telling me you didn't tell them that we were going to record our podcast here?
See, I never got to that part.
Oh.
Oh.
So they're probably pretty upset.
Well, I mean, they'll live.
I mean, like, we didn't even buy ice cream, so we weren't even a customer.
Yeah, and I definitely used their bathroom without asking.
Wow.
They can live. It's okay. A lot of companies like us, okay? Okay, there's a lot of companies that like us. For example,
there's four kinds of companies in particular
that like us. That like us enough to allow us to promote our podcast from their windows.
And, how nice.
And their business fronts. Thank you to local game stores for being amazing, being there to help grow the community, and being a place where, you know, pre-COVID and hopefully post-COVID as well, they're places to go meet people that are like-minded in terms of the games that you play, and are also going to be there to play games with anybody else who wants to. And that's how we met.
It's been a while since we've really talked about game stores. But yeah, like, if it weren't for game stores, I wouldn't know Ben.
Yeah. Me and Jake know each other before that, but yeah, we didn't know Ben or Hayden or Bailey or Kevin or Dale or Justine. We didn't know any of them.
Literally pretty much all of the guests.
Yeah.
The guests that were for the Patreon.
But these four in particular. So, you know, we've got to always talk about Forgotten Path Games. They've been supporters of us since day one. All right. Two of the people that work there
have been on the show
are Patreon supporters.
Oh, yeah.
And have they've given us an item to be able to showcase. Like our one shot that Jake ran, that was because of Forgotten Path.
I loved it because I didn't have to be creative and think of it on my own.
Yeah. The other one that we have is Mad Alpaca Games. They are in Fairfield by the mall. And by Fairfield, I do not mean Fairfield, Virginia, because we live in California.
Oh
yeah. Okay. So this is another cool little game store. They've actually got a pretty big back room that they're operating as of right now, and we're recording this at 25% capacity. You have to reserve the tables, so that way they can kind of keep scheduling straightened out and not have conflict there. But that's pretty cool. Then there's Davis Cards and Games in, you guessed it, Davis.
Dixon. Oh.
And you know, we appreciate these guys also allowing us to hang up a poster. And then there's a game store that actually just opened up at the beginning of March. I don't even think that I had known that until I was looking up game stores in the area, found them, and then looked them up on Facebook and saw that they just opened up in March. So I was super excited to see them. It's called Hobby Badger Games in West Sacramento. And I went in there and I talked to the guys for like an hour, just you know, talking back and forth about random things. Super cool guys. I love talking to them. They are planning on being huge supporters of the show. And they even at some point are going to, you know, be having us there to run a game, whether it be a continuous game or a one shot. We still got to work out details, but that is something that we talked about with them. Please go to your local game stores. Support them.
Yeah, local game stores are a great way to, one, buy dice. You don't have to pay shipping. Yes.
Shiny click clacks.
I need clicker clackers for my collection. Anyways, but you could also, you know, buy spell cards or, you know, books. I highly recommend that if you can, whenever you buy a new book that comes out, like Baby Tosh's Cauldron and Everything, which is what we are partially covering today, I would highly recommend that you go get it from a game store, because gotta support them, and also you get a cool neat book now. So, you know, yeah, most of them will allow you to like special order and make sure like that you can get a custom the alternate covers whenever they come out and stuff like that. I know Forgotten Path held a couple for you two, and that kind of stuff. Like, you know, I mean, they're just cool people, all right?
Yeah, honestly, the people that work in these shops, they're super knowledgeable about just about everything that they sell, and they're passionate about a lot of these things, and so you can really get that sense when talking to them. And
it's nice to exactly be a part of the community, you know. Yeah. But yeah, highly recommend it. Also, if you guys didn't know, you can find us all over the interwebs on a number of different platforms. I'm sure you've heard me say all this before, but you're about to hear me say it all again, and we're just going to kind of deal with it. We not only just publish all of these episodes on the multiple podcast platforms, but we also upload them all to YouTube for your viewing pleasure, if you ever would like to do that, at YouTube at Travelers Tips and Tales. We also have an Instagram at Travelers Tips and Tales, a Facebook with Travelers Tips and Tales, Twitter page at Tips Tales. We have a Tumblr, which is Travelers Tips and Tales. We have a Patreon if you'd like to go check us out and support us there, which is Travelers Tips and Tales. We also have an email address if you'd like to email us. You can email us any questions you have about D&D 5th edition, or, you know, if you want incorrect answers, well, you could probably ask us like 40k answers, 40k questions. I'm sure we might get it wrong, but who cares? You know, whatever you want to ask
for
us.
Yourself.
You could also just call us ugly people or whatever. I don't really care. Yeah, you could email us at travelerstipsandtales@gmail.com, or you could go check out our website and kind of, you know, dip your toes in before you jump into the deep end and see what kind of what we're about. And that's at travelerstipsandtales.com. All of those places, very nice. Also, huge shout out to Ben's mom and Dalton.
Yes, very for being cool in homies. Our top tier Patreon, which they get shouted out. But if you guys don't want to be shouted out, that's okay. You can enter into one of our many esteemed Patreon levels if you guys are interested in helping us out. Or if you guys just want to give like a one-time donation, just let it go from the beginning of the month and cancel it, and we'll accept that, and we'll be like, you know what, that's fair. You guys don't want to give us any more than a dollar. That's totally fair.
You know what? I get it, homie. You do you.
And
don't put your guys.
Times is tough out there, boys.
Yeah, we appreciate the support, but don't spend money that you don't have, or be responsible. Yeah. Don't, please.
We have jobs. We'll survive, but you know.
Hey, speak for yourself.
You know, another thing, like I know we all probably hate these kinds of people. We know these people. They're on YouTube. They talk about, you know, subscribers versus non-subscribers and all that. But honestly, guys, you know, we're trying to grow. We're trying to make moves. You know, if you're watching this on YouTube, please just consider subscribing. In the last month, 34% of our views not subscribed.
Ooh, yucky.
That's rough. Yeah. We want to be hitting 100%. We want to be setting records out here, boys.
100%. We don't want any new people.
Can you imagine new people the audacity? Find our podcast. The audacity of people listening and not subscribing afterwards, and then listening to a second episode. Like, bro, you could have been listening unsubscribed, bro.
Man, you really making it the long shot and reaching episode 42, session 42, the 43rd episode of our entire podcast. Don't worry about it. It's a little complicated for no reason at all, because we wanted it to be.
Yeah, and you know, during quarantine, it can be kind of hard to keep track of time. All you have to do, hit that little notification bell.
Yeah. Be like, oh my goodness, it is Wednesday, huh? Let me tell you, I am the one responsible for uploading it on Wednesday, and I'm sometimes like, oh hey, it's Wednesday, isn't it? That's neat.
Yeah, we literally have a group chat that it's like Tuesday night. Hey, let's make sure that we're posting, guys.
And I go, yeah, totally.
I still go to work Monday through Friday every week. I still lose track of the day sometimes. It's honestly kind of bad.
I'm a little concerned.
I'm honest. Quarantine has nothing to do with it. I'm just really bad at time. And with that, adventure awaits.
Hey, you kids, get out of here. Oh, we gotta go.